Hey guys, Scott here. Welcome back to another episode of Verbal Shenanigans. We got a really jam-packed episode with you with three fantastic guests tonight. So I'm going to get right into it. We're happy. Thank you guys for listening. Our numbers are up. Thank you for checking out the BS Podcast Network. Go check them out, us and some other podcasts. Let's get to the sponsors. We are really happy to have one of our sponsors back. It feels like our family's coming home. Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F. Wolf Nation stands for Wake Up, Live Free Apparel. The world's next hottest and biggest designer brand. No matter what your goals in life are, as long as you are pursuing it, Wolf Nation is the brand for you. Follow them on Instagram, or they're taking pre-orders there. You can direct message them at Wolf Nation, W-L-F Nation, or email them at wolf@wolfnation.com. And make sure to follow them at Twitter at wolfnation_wolf. And remember, it's only a dream if you don't pursue it. We're happy to have Richie and Wolf Nation back. They make some really nice clothes. A lot of things coming out for kids, women, children. So it's just going to be a great, you know, we're very happy to have them back. That is Wolf Nation. Wake up, live free. Now, Susan Robb is one of our sponsors out of Toronto, Canada. Susan works with senior executives in leadership development and also runs a business as a speaker agent for some pretty cool speakers. She's gotten us a lot of guests on the show. Coach Jim Johnson, Dave Andrechuk, Bob Rathbun, the Atlanta Hawks announcer. She also works with a girl from Wisconsin named Kim Ward. Now, the two of them, they are tirelessly advocating and raising money to inspire and empower a group of women and kids in Nepal. So far, they have raised enough money to put 14 kids into school and have helped a group of ladies start a sewing business where they make quilts. These quilts, they've made 13 of them and sold them all over the four different countries. And all these proceeds go to their Nepal outreach program. Their goal is to raise money and take the proceeds and put it right back into the outreach program into their next phase of sustainability. So go check them out. It's a great cause. Go to their GoFundMe/Vimla, V-I-M-L-A. And go help them out, guys. It's a great cause. We love supporting them here on Verbal Shenanigans. Now, we are lucky to have two brewery sponsors on this podcast. One of them happens to be Demented Brewing, located in Middlesex, New Jersey. One of the coolest tap rooms around. They always do something new on Sundays. They do something in the ton on Tuesdays. And I love them because they do just so many different styles of beer. It's not just IPAs. It's not just barrel-aged stouts. It's something different all the time. For instance, they just released Lust, their chocolate stout, on draft in the tasting room. And this Sunday, they're going to be releasing Oni, their all-new double IPA, and Melancholy, a new cantaloupe sour. So really cool things coming out of Demented Brewing. Go check them out on Instagram and Facebook, and definitely go get a pint there, Demented Brewing. Now, Manskirt Brewing is the other brewery sponsor we have on the show, and that's up in Northwest Jersey in Hackettstown, in the old bank building on Main Street. You got to go check them out. It's a cool spot to hang. 8 seasonally inspired ales, always changing. They're making Imperial Progress, their 8.5% English Imperial IPA, and that's going to be their fourth flagship beer, so you're going to see that in stores. Go check out Manskirt Brewing. Go buy a Manskirt and go wear it there. They're just an awesome bunch of guys over there, so Manskirt Brewing. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Every week, we host trivia all over the state of New Jersey in beer bars and craft breweries. You can be in last place and win prizes. There's a bonus item every week, so follow Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. This week is loaded on the podcast, guys. First and foremost, we have the Nigerian Nightmare himself, Chiefs running back, just a legend in the game, especially Tecmo Super Bowl. But Christian Okoye joins us on the show. Then we have Devin Harris, one of the original Jamaican bobsledders, give us a call and promote something that he's got going on with the Jamaican bobsledders in the Olympics. And our good friend, competitive eater, Randy Santel, joined us on the show. So it is loaded. It is fun. Guys, keep subscribing. Keep listening. Keep listening and enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is Christian Okoye, the Nigerian Nightmare. You've been listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
Hey, everybody. This is Randy Santel, Atlas with Atlas and Zeus Promotions, the proud owner of foodchallenges.com. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans, and here in a little bit, I'll be speaking with Scott and Michael.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
baby.
Yeah.
Crawling into episode 188, I believe. 100.
You crawled into that number, I know that.
Crawled into episode 188, approaching 200. Not that that really means anything. Maybe we'll have another party.
Yeah. Well, on the Google Calendar, I think it's April 23rd would be our 200th episode recording.
So. All right. All right. You know. So get ready for Mick Jagger, guys. On the April 23rd, so.
It'd be really good if we get him on, like, 1-9, like, we miscount and it's 199. It's like, God damn it, now what?
Call up Chips. Anyway, everybody, welcome back to the show. We are rocking and rolling here in 2018. Mm-hmm. I was laughing today because I was going over the schedule and a couple names came in that, like, we kind of have to interview and... I remember we're like, let's try to do like maybe just one a week, you know, one guy a week. Suddenly we've had six episodes in a row with two.
Uh-huh.
We're recording three interviews tonight. We have one in the bank. Backlog. So we're not very good at sticking to a plan.
No.
But hey, it's a good problem though, right? If we had nobody, then, you know,
Then we would just talk to each other. Who wants that?
Basically, I'm just loading up on interviews to lessen the time we have to communicate.
I would love to know, when was our last interview or episode where it was just the two of us? I got to think that's like back in like number 80 or something like that.
I don't know. That is a good question because I know it was none last year. That was like a whole goal last mm-hmm. year was just to do... a guest per week, and we ended up having like an 89 guest or something. But hey, yeah, I don't want to talk to you. I know yeah. everything about you, kind of, yeah, sort of.
I saw the Dukes of Hazzard last night.
But yeah, we got a good show. If you guys go back two episodes ago, where we interviewed, was it two, Kenny Anderson and John Morris?
Yeah,
two yeah, episodes. Yeah. Our boy John Morris is so. By the time this goes up, we'll know. But he's competing for the gold medal tonight, so I guess early in Korea. Well, nighttime there, really early in the morning, I think it would be here.
Yeah.
He's going for the mixed doubles in, I guess there's a mixed doubles now. It's like a new event, I think.
That's the first Olympic, at least a medal. I'm not sure if they had it as an exhibition before, but this is...
Yeah, I was watching. I think they said they have tournaments and stuff like that, but this is the first Olympic competition. So, yeah, so we might be able to add gold medalists to
yeah. Aisha Ash, if you're listening, look at that. We're letting dames into curling, you know? You know, we're letting you go in with the boys, you know?
The broads.
Yeah, you got to feel special. Hey, Chickadee, come with me.
Mm-hmm.
South Korea, let's go. What are we doing? Hey, no lip.
You sound just like Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah, I know. equal comedy careers as well.
Very similar. Mm. You're just not there yet. You're developing your act still.
Yeah, look, I got the accent down. It's the whole comedy with it that's going to...
That's the hard part. It's usually the hard part.
Yeah. I mean, remember that time I did the open mic for 20 minutes on the accent? They're like, Burlew, you're just reading names off of the yellow books. I'm like, hey, like, that's my bit.
They're like, you blew the light by 12 minutes. Get off the stage.
And what's the deal with this light here, Chickadee? What the hell?
Hey,
Is that my order of fries, babe? Put it down.
Bada bing, boom, pow.
Better not be too hot.
You've been watching the Olympics? Are you watching the Olympics? I've been into it a little bit.
I haven't had a chance to watch the Olympics so far this year. I've been pretty busy, went away for the weekend, and there's just been no downtime to kind of, you know, engulf myself into the events, if you will.
Engulf yourself? That's very...
How
deep do you get?
It's real serious, you know. I turn off my phone, I turn off my lights.
I picture you watching the luge with, like, a helmet on. Like.
Yeah, I tell the mailman, you know, keep my mail for 2 weeks. I don't want to even think about seeing a bill when I'm watching my luge, okay? I don't play around.
You're in the spandex suit,
mm-hmm.
and you're just sitting on the couch.
I got the gun for the biathlon and other reasons.
You're leaning left and right as the guy's going down the track and the skeleton.
No, middle, what's wrong with you?
I watched a little bit of everything. One event was kind of cool. It was like a skiathlon. It was kind of boring most of the time, but a guy fell in like the first 30 seconds and was like 40 seconds behind the whole pack and ended up winning the race. That was pretty cool because there was like a lot of time to make up. And like,
yeah, that's one of the hardest things in those long mileage kind of thing. I remember a regular marathon where a guy was in the lead and he actually made a wrong turn and he went about 100 feet and had to like turn around and sprint, but he did eventually take the lead. Like, even the guy who was in the lead when he passed him, he's like slapped on the back like, you deserved it.
Yeah, so I saw that. Yesterday there was a lot of figure skating on, and let me know, do you think this weird, there was like ice dancing. I guess there's part of like a whole team event where there's like I think there's like an ice dancer, a single, a double. I think it's like a new thing, but the people from America are like a brother and sister that ice dance together. It's a little weird to me.
Close are they? Like grinding?
They're calling each other, spinning each other by the legs, like all that ice dancing stuff. Like the very like kind of romantic couple. I felt a little weird about it.
Yeah, like, the parents must be like, should we be happy they got the goal? I mean, we're going to have to talk to people after this. USA Today will be asking us what their childhood was like.
Like the idea of like practicing and like wearing, you know, flashy outfits with your sister is a little weird to me. And like, apparently they have fans like all over the world.
Yeah, sis, hold me in like this. There you go. All right, now gaze upon my eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, like look exactly like their coach. Like, look deeper in your eyes. Smile more. Like, be a little bit more romantic. Like, I don't know. I found out that there's a sequence in ice dancing called a twizzle sequence.
Ooh.
They're like, and they're
they hold like licorice candies. They're just like,
they were like, oh, they're going into their second twizzle sequence of the night. I'm like, twizzle sequence.
I twizzle sequence in the bed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I told you, I get engulfed, baby.
But yeah, I don't want to be doing twizzle sequences with my sister. Like,
no, I guess it could be worse. It could be his brother. The first two men.
I was gonna say that'll happen soon. Or like a transgender guy, you know, like, you know, it's common.
Mean, all power to them. And I guess that's kind of an interesting question. And like, as we progress more and more transgenders, do they go into the sport as the gender they identify as? Is there a separate event for transgenders itself?
Well, this has happened. You've seen stories like all over the place, like in high schools and stuff, like a transgender like man. So like a man who is identifying as a woman will be allowed to compete against him, and he's like crushing them in wrestling and stuff like that, or track and field, which to me is just, it's just wrong. Like, you know, they can compete, but they're going to be winning these medals. If we're going to ignore the fact that a man's body is naturally stronger, naturally faster, like, you know, biologically.
That's kind of why they separated the events. That's not why everybody's in one group, why they did it.
Right. I mean, if you're going to tell me, like, all right, I'm getting my ass kicked in my division in MMA, but, like, if I go right now and, like, join the women's division.
Oh, you still get your ass kicked.
I'll get my butt kicked, but I guarantee I can mess a few up. Like, you know, there might be a few girls I can knock out. Like, you know, like, so That's where I have a problem with it. Like sports, like figure skating, I guess it wouldn't really matter unless like both guys can like launch each other into the air further.
Extreme ice skating. ECW presents ice skating.
Yeah, that's what I don't want to see. Flamboyant guys. I want to see like jacked up, like yoked up dudes just launching each other into the sky.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
They should just allow, like, do a whole separate steroid Olympics, like just where everyone is as roided up as possible, no limitations, and just see where the human body, how freaky the human body can get.
At the same time they do the 100-meter dash, the roid people are going to do the mile, and we're still going to see who finishes first when they shoot off the gun.
Exactly. I was watching a little bit of biathlon. That's a kind of a strange sport.
The gun one, right?
Yeah, skiing with a gun on your back, and then you stop to shoot and ski again, and then shoot again. I don't know where.
It doesn't seem like a natural progression.
What I mean. I don't know where that sport like originated from. Like, was it like an old hunting thing, like in the woods, where they were like, the biathlon is skiing and then hunting your target, and then, Or did someone just like, I know it would be cool. Naturally, they have a southern accent. If we're going to ski down that mountain with that gun and then race around again, if you can get around quicker with that gun and shoot more targets, you're the winner.
I got an idea here, Ski. What we're going to do is we're going to put him in the number three GM Goodrich car. You know, Dale, we miss you, Dale. We're going to put him in the car. He's going down the slope, and he's just going to start shooting. He's never going to stop. He's going 200 miles an hour just shooting at anything he wants.
Another strange event, the dual luge. That's a little weird, too. Like, all right, brother, I'm going to lay on this sled, and I want you to lay right on top of me in spandex, and we're going to turn around together.
Yeah.
A little bizarre sport. Looks kind of weird. Like it
doesn't look natural. Again, it's in like, who said this was going to work?
Yeah. And it's like, that sled is nowhere near big enough for like two. Like if it was like a big sled, like where there were like two seats maybe. Like bobsledding looks a lot more natural than the luge.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for like the two-man skeleton, like where he just plops on it, plops on the guy's back. rides him down.
Bareback.
How about no sled? How about like the guy just gets really like greased up and like the other guy rides him down the track?
That'd be great, man.
But yeah, I dig the Winter Olympics. I think they're pretty cool.
What would be the steering wheel in that scenario?
I mean, I guess if he goes down on his back, it could be like his shaft.
Whoa, look at that. It's like an old school Atari controller.
Exactly.
Nice.
But yeah, there's some good, like the snowboarding is amazing. I mean, I watched like the 17-year-old kid from America. He won the gold medal. That was pretty cool. But yeah, I'm pretty into the Winter Olympics. It's something to put on. I think I like the winter, but I feel like I'm starting to get sick of it a little bit. And it kind of breaks up the winter a little bit. You know, something to watch.
It kind of sucks.
After the Super Bowl's over, it's like, this is the doldrums of the NHL and NBA season. It's kind of like, all right, let's get to the playoffs here.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of sucks that the NHL ain't down there for the hockey, man.
Yeah, I think it kind of stinks. Especially last time was so exciting with like TJ Oshie and all that, and like the U.S. team. It's exciting when they play, and I felt like the hockey, they got into it. Like they, you know, the teams were playing.
Yeah, they definitely got into it way more. I mean, basketball is almost boring because nobody's close to America. But then again, the last one, Americans were kind of iffy.
It feels like Lithuania is always there, and like Spain is the other team that's like close. But I don't know. It's a.
I will also say it's the smartest thing they ever did was break up the winter and the summer, because that was just a long ass draw with. You go through the entire summer with the other ones. It's like, oh, they're back again. You got your American pride. It's snow time.
Yeah. I don't know. It's the Olympics are pretty cool, though. I think it's it's funny how like those little sports can become like at what the nation's watching for 2 weeks, and then they're forgotten for 4 years. Like no one's sitting there like, you know, I really enjoyed the curling, and I'm going to watch curling. All the like the World Cups and the internet, you know,
dude.
The meets
did you see the skeleton qualifying? We're 3 years away.
I know. It's just weird how like sports don't like catch on. Like, I mean, I guess you could say some of the X Games stuff does. People do watch that and do follow like the snowboarders.
Well, that's how the Winter Olympics had to boost their, like, at first when they heard about snowboarding, they're like, oh, that's not a Winter Olympic. And then when they saw the rains, they're like, oh, come on over.
Yeah. So. I don't know. I'm curious of what's going to be like. What sports are going to evolve into the, Olympics over the next couple of years? But we'll see.
Well, I was looking up. I was trying to see if I could find like a bunch of weird Olympic events, and most of the stuff like that's funny was just like animal stuff. Like apparently, like in the 1900s, they just literally had an event where they shot live pigeons. They just like some guy who won the gold shot 22 pigeons and. I'm guessing that's not gonna.
Not like clay pigeons, like
no, like actual tweet tweet kind of birdie pigeons. That's how I usually describe pigeons to people.
Yeah, very, very good use of words today.
Yeah.
you're engulfed in pigeon shooting.
I got that thesaurus out. I saw tweet tweet. I'm like, all right,
very tweet tweet pigeon shooting.
Yeah. And then they
always described you as this generation's wordsmith.
And then they also had, apparently they had horse dancing.
I think I
I think I've seen that. Maybe that wasn't Olympics, but I've definitely seen that, like,
where
on equestrian.
Where they prance around. They don't jump anywhere. Right. They just literally train the horse to kind of, like, do a two-step.
And that's the question. Does the, like, isn't that more the horse? Shouldn't he be the Olympic champion? Like,
Look at the great job he did. All he said was go.
Yeah, and, like, you're just on the saddle making the horse. The horse is doing all the work.
Yeah, that's wrong.
When the Kentucky Derby goes, we don't really, like, no one really knows the jockey that much. They know the horse's name.
But they still praise the jockey a ton.
They do.
And, I mean, I don't get it. I'd love to get a jockey on the show. It's just like, so what do you
do? But you're going to you remember, like, Secretariat's name rather than, like, Bob Horse Rider, whatever his name is.
He was a Hall of Famer, Bob Horse Rider. Man,
Bobby Saddles.
Yeah, I tried to get his autograph, but there was just such a mob. I couldn't get it. I kept on screaming, Bobby, I love you. And I couldn't get his.
That'd be a mess too, like getting the horses to the event, like in South Korea, transporting
even think about
them.
That.
Oof. You're not putting, like, your skis in a bag, like an equipment bag. You're bringing a horse and feed, and they got to have a setup for.
Yeah, and the Russians are going to put illegal stuff in the horse so it goes 100 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think horse racing now is probably, that's probably all the tracks, all those horses are probably jacked up on stuff, you know, methamphetamine and stuff. Mm. But
I wish I was horse jacked. I
mean, is horse jacked different than, like, human jacked?
Yeah, you got to think a jacked up horse versus a jacked up human would kick
still
the living
no
crap
contest.
Out of a man.
You know? Oh, we are. Sometimes I just think about how puny we are. Like, just about any animal who's mad enough is stronger than us. You know, like
any animal in the jungle, pretty much they own us.
They own us, right? Just because we have guns and stuff, but, like. In a one-on-one situation against an angry animal, what can we beat? We could be like maybe a rabbit. You could be
but
like
we still want to catch at it.
A goose. Yeah, goose. And I've seen them get pretty crazy on videos.
Oh,
before.
Yeah. They'll snap you.
They'll get you.
All right. So we got down the car. We're in number 3 Chevy. We're going down the hill. We're shooting those geese out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we don't have much of a chance. Like, I mean, even like a... Even like a cow, I feel like if they were angry and they start throwing their body weight around, a cow would mow you down. Or moo you down.
You're the wordsmith today, Scott. The name of this episode will be Tweet Tweet Moo Moo.
But yeah, we're just designed so like a monkey, like a 40-pound little like monkey. Is just all muscle, you know? And, like, they can mess you up, rip your nose off, take your genitals and crush them.
They never had an office job. They don't sit around for 8 hours. So.
Yeah, we've just evolved to just gigantic wusses. Like, we have no chance against it. If this, you know, meteor comes and we start over again, we're doomed.
Like, if it goes right to the beginning, it's like, all right, somebody's going to take control of the planet. It brings back all the animals, you know, I might have to be on, like, a bear side or something like that. I'll be the traitor. I'll be the...
I picture, like, a throne surrounded by bears, like...
My sire, they're going to come from the north later tonight.
Pesky humans. This shall be the last time.
Dilly, dilly.
What was that Polish... Remember we read about that Polish bear in Bear News one time? That, like... They drank with him and stuff like that, and the bear... It was one of the bear news. I'll have to look him up again. But I think it's time to get to a guest.
I agree.
All right, brother. First guest of the day out of all 27 of them we have tonight. But
I can't wait for 24.
This is a big one. This is a big one. This is one that I'm excited about. Mm-hmm. I hear his name, I think, of Tecmo Super Bowl error. Like, he was, like, a monster in that game. Obviously, a monster in real life. You may know him as the Nigerian Nightmare, which is, as far as nicknames go, I don't think it gets much better.
It's kind of hard to say. Like, in that era of, like, who was it? Craig Ironhead what was his last name? Heyman? Remember from the Saints, Craig Ironhead...
Ironhead's pretty good.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I feel like up until Megatron, that was a good one too. Megatron, that was pretty classic. But the Nigerian Nightmare, Christian Okoye, is joining us on the show today.
Awesome.
So you may remember him from the Kansas City Chiefs, and this guy was a beast. So let's give him a call and hear what Christian's got to say.
Yeah. Craig Ironhead Hayward. No.
Hello?
Hey, is this Christian?
Speaking.
Christian, it's Scott and Mike from Verbal Shenanigans. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
We're doing very good.
Doing great.
Is this number cool to talk on?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Christian, first off, thanks for giving us a couple minutes here, man. I was just saying, when I think of you, as far as me growing up, I think of your character in Tecmo Super Bowl being pretty much invincible. like, I remember just being, it was you, it was like Bo Jackson and like Lawrence Taylor were like the three characters in that game that were just pretty much invincible. First question, did you ever play that game as yourself?
Yes, I have. Actually, I played it about for the first time maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
So you didn't know of your legend until 2 or 3 years ago?
Well, people always had told me, but you know, I didn't quite understand it until NFL Films came out and they did a story on it, and they brought the game with them. So I played it.
Were you impressed with yourself?
Yes, I was. I felt like I was on the field playing myself.
So Christian, you know, I was reading up on you for the interview today. As the Winter Olympics are going on, for what I can tell, you were the original reason you were here in the United States was you were a really big Olympic athlete doing in track and field. What got you into that kind of stuff?
Well, right from Nigeria, yeah, I got into track and field. I loved soccer, and I played soccer all through high school. But all of a sudden, I started growing, and my dad didn't like me playing soccer. So I switched to track and field. And I started out running, doing the hurdles and the 100 meters. But I was still growing and growing bigger and bigger. And so I switched to discus and shot put and hammer throw. That's where I ended up.
Now, when you started getting good at that, did you start to abandon soccer completely, or did you continue to play? And did you ever, like, when you're growing up in Nigeria, did you ever consider that, like, that's how what you were going to do, or were you doing it more for fun at the time?
I mean, soccer?
Soccer and then track.
Well, when I was playing soccer, I thought that would be it, because I loved soccer so much. I still do. But my size didn't allow me to continue. And when I switched to track and field, eventually discus, shot put, and the hammer, I became more interested in the discus, and I thought I was going to end up in the Olympics, and I trained for it, and I qualified to get there. But Nigeria never took me, so... When I decided that I'm going to do something else, and football was the thing.
Now, did you have any, like, was the game of football known well at all in Nigeria? Did you have any clue how to play when you first discussed, like, even getting into it, or did someone come and find you?
No, I didn't know anything about football. I saw my first football game, the first few weeks of my freshman year at Azusa Pacific here in California. Prior to that, I never knew anything about the game. And when I saw it, a friend of mine took me to the game, I didn't like it. And I told him, I said, let's get out of here. And then we left. And I never went to another football game until my junior year in college, when I found out Nigeria is not taking me to the Olympics. So I decided I'm going to try football.
I know you were talking about how rough the sport is, and it took a lot of guys to keep you into it. About how long into it did you were you playing and practicing before you think you really enjoyed it and thought you had like a real knack for the game?
Well, But I tell you what, I don't think I really started enjoying the game until even after I retired.
Wow.
yeah. Because it was a foreign sport to me. And throughout the time I played in college, my friends kept me in the game. They told me, you know, to stay on, that I'm going to be good and so on and so forth. So they were the reason why I stayed and played 2 years. And then I said to myself, that's it for me. At the end of that 2 years, scouts from the NFL were coming to check me out, because there was a story on LA Times that came out. So they were coming to check me out. And, so they told me, they advised me that I should go back and you know, play one more year. If I can do that, maybe I can gain more experience, and hopefully I will try out and play in the NFL maybe. So at the end of my third year, I was invited to the Senior Bowl. And that's where everything changed, because I scored 4 touchdowns there.
Now, you said you didn't really feel like you enjoyed the game until after you retired and whatnot. What about the game, other than it being a foreign game? Was it the physicality of the game? Was it just having no connection to it? And also, while you were playing, did you feel like as if you were just, you know, kind of doing this for a career? Or were you when the games were happening, were you actually like enjoying them at the time, or was there just, you know, you were kind of going through the motions?
No, everything, all of the above, you know. I mean, I would say probably the only time I seemed like I enjoyed it was when I scored a touchdown. You know, it's a relief. Okay, it's over for now.
Right.
For me, yeah, and I scored a touchdown. That was a success. You know, but other than that, you know, practices were horrible. Just the physicality, like you said, you know, the contact is just incredibly crazy. I wasn't used to that.
Right.
We didn't have that in track and field or soccer. So, I made up my mind, if I'm playing it, I'm going to play well. I'm going to stick with it. If I'm going to quit, I will just walk away and quit. You know, that's how I took it back then.
With so little knowledge of the game, other than, like you said, when you first saw it, when you're in, like, practices, how hard is it to, like, figure out the plays? And were you able to, like, put out suggestions on, yo, coach, I'd like to try this kind of play or go to the left or something like that?
I didn't have any idea what I was doing. I couldn't suggest anything. I was just there and listening to them to, you know, give me some directions, and they were giving me directions. So I was just following everybody's directions, and even my teammates, they were teaching me, and, you know, everybody was my teacher, my coach. You see, even when I was in Kansas City, my teammates were, you know, giving me some pointers here and there. And the coaches knew that I was so young in the game, and I didn't play long. I only played 3 years of organized football,
right?
You know, before I was drafted. So everybody had a hand in teaching me the game, you know, from college to Kansas City.
Now, was there ever like a is there a moment that comes to your mind where, you know, like maybe if there was like a movie of your life and you did something in football that everyone's like, whoa, like were you running the wrong way or you didn't know the rules yet? Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, I picture a scene in like a football movie. Was there anything?
I ran the wrong way a lot of times in college. Hey, and they made fun of me and one of my teammates, Joe Shooter, another running back. He went and made a cardboard sign and put an arrow on it. So, yeah. And every time a play is called, he put it on the ground for me, you know. So he had his fun. He had his fun.
Now, also, talking about your college, kind of a unique thing, as you went from the Olympics to football, I remember a story how you hit Dave Johnson, and he basically turned from football into the Olympics. Did you kind of know him before that incident, and did you keep up with his career as he went into the Olympics?
You knocked the football out of him.
Oh, yeah. We stayed friends, you know, even till today, because he went to my school, and he went on to the Olympics and had that big commercial with the Dan and Dave thing going on. But, yeah, I stayed up with him.
Now, let me ask you something. You, like, in interviews and just talking to you now, you seem like just a very super nice, down-to-earth kind of guy. Is it hard to ramp up to get into that football mindset? Like you said, you weren't really enjoying it that much. Is it hard to get into that battle mode? I can't even imagine, like you said, the contact and the injuries. Like, is it a hard time before the game to get yourself to that level?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, the way I took football or any sport is, you know, when you're about to do, like, for instance, when I was throwing discus, I often, when I go around telling kids or speaking to kids in motivational thing, I tell them, I said, the moment when you're about to do something, that is the only thing that you're about to do. You know,
like be in the moment. Yeah,
you're in the moment. That's the nothing else should come in between you and that thing right there. So if you are at home having fun with your family, that's what it is. You're spending time with family. You know, if you're throwing shot puts at that moment when you step into the ring, that's what you're gonna do. That's what you're doing. There's no need thinking about anything else because that will be a distraction. So the way I took it is when I was playing. And I'm on the field, you know, I concentrated, I studied, you know, our opponents and made sure that I knew exactly what I'm doing and knew my the defenses. And I just did it, you know. But outside of that, any other way you can, you know, prepare to play the game at all.
Right.
Now, when you were in the league, there was a ton of huge, big, bulldozing kind of running backs. I think of you. I think of Craig Ironhead Hayward, Mike Allstott. We kind of don't see those guys anymore in the backfield. They kind of look for those almost slippery type of running backs and all. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think if you were in the league today, you could work just as well as you did when you started?
Well, you know, it's a passing league, you know. I mean, the game has changed quite a bit. And sometimes, you know, some teams get caught up in that, get caught up in the change. But if you watch some of those teams who go deep in the playoffs, even playing in the Super Bowl, you find out they have part of that old school style playing football.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be able to run the ball. And when you run the ball, you have a chance. I know defenses win championships, but still, when you run the ball, you control the clock. You control everything that you're doing. You know, you support your quarterback, your offensive line, have that motivation to go out there and play harder. And your defense, you know, love that when you hold on to the ball, you know, because it gives them a breather.
Right. Now, let me ask you something. You start to gain a lot of notoriety as you're playing. You're obviously very good at what you're doing. You're the Chiefs' leading rusher. And how is the reaction back home in Nigeria? Are they starting to pay attention to you? Are you becoming like a thing there? Or do they not even know what's going on in America?
Well, you know, a lot of Nigerians are playing in the NFL now and in college. So there are more attention being paid to football.
Right.
They know in Nigeria, they know about Christian Okoye, but if they see me on the street, they will not recognize me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, but they do know about the game. And I just received an email the other day. Somebody in the country is trying to start football league for the kids out there. It's going to be hard, but, you know, and he was asking for my help. I don't know how I can help him, but it's going to be extremely difficult because you need the medical staff,
right?
You know, to be present in order to do such a thing. Otherwise, you have to be facing flag football and do just flag football, which I was planning on doing anyway.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point. I wanted to hear your take on that. As far as, you know, we hear so much now at the end of where you, when you played, it seemed like no one even recognized it. You know, just, you know, get back out there. You're hitting the head, you know, take a breath. Now we see so many things with the concussion protocol and the CTE and you know, youth sports playing flag football up into a certain age, teaching all this safe tackling. And, you know, how do you feel the NFL is doing as far as addressing these concerns? Do you think they're doing a good job, or is this something that, you know, should have been done years ago and you feel that they were ignoring?
Well, they should have done it years ago, but I'm glad they're coming around and doing that. But I think they're doing a good job. I hear many people, many critics saying that football is being watered down. I don't think so, because football, man, it's when you play in the NFL, if you play in college, any football you play, it's equivalent to having several accidents.
Right.
You know? So, I truly think football is not meant for human beings to play. It's supposed to be a video game.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, but, you know, but since we're playing it, you might as well try as much as you can to make it safer for those human beings playing the game.
Now, tell us about you. Do you feel average career you had longer than, but you also retired in six seasons. But I wonder if, like you said, not playing till like your junior year helped a little bit with injuries. But how is your body held up, and how do you feel these days now that you're 56?
I'm doing okay, even though I didn't play till my junior year in college. I sure made up for it.
Yeah, we see it from the clip video that we can Google.
yeah. So I made up for it. So my body is, I'm hurting just as much as all these guys who are hobbling around.
Yeah.
You know, so, but again, going back on the safety of the game, I think it's a good idea, and I support the NFL, and I think they should do more. You know, there are so many areas where they can do some to change the game to make it safer. And there one way I think, in my head, I think my suggestion is as much money as all these guys are making right now, I think if you play 10 years, you should just quit, or they should kick you out. 10 years tops. You know, these guys playing 15 years and 17 years, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's ridiculous. How much money do you want to make?
It's true.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're making $10 million a year, $7 million a year, you know, after playing 10 years, that's enough. Go and buy, you know, some bars or something like that. Or buy you know, and do whatever. But to play and take the place of other guys who are graduating from college who need to be playing the NFL. You know, it should be a young man's game. That's what I think.
That's an interesting thought. When you retired, you talked about you retired because practice was more work than fun. Now, obviously, the league also changed those rules a lot. They cut down on a lot of the summer practices and all that stuff. Do you think if they did it when you were playing, you might have tried another team when the Chiefs cut you?
You know, I will have probably played out my contract or something. But, you know, if the game was like this, I would have, you know, tried to play another 2-3 years, you know.
Yeah.
But it was just too hard. It was too hard on my body. And there's no other way that I can play it safer than I did. You know, playing the way I played, there's no way you can play safe.
I mean, it's actually refreshing to hear a guy like you who, you know, we didn't even address you probably have the greatest nickname of all time. It's up in the top five. Nigerian Nightmare.
Yeah.
It explains your play, just brutal, hard play, you know, crafty. But it's refreshing to hear a guy like you say, I couldn't play it safe, and I retired when I, you know, when it felt right, and the practices were too hard. And it makes
it seems so much more real. Like, where the average fan, like me or Mike here, is like, get back in the game, you know, like, or this guy. The average fan has no idea the punishment you guys go through.
No, they have no idea. I mean, they don't know that you took more punishment in practices than game. Game is nothing.
Right.
Game is not even 10% of what was going on in practice. You know, in practice is where the damages were done, you see, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, we had the pleasure of interviewing Trent Dilfer a couple months ago, and I remember him telling us a story that, you know, him being on the floor of the bathroom all night because he could barely walk back to his bed or something like that, you know, after games. So it's incredible. We see you on Sundays and Monday nights, and, you know, we don't see what happens Monday through Saturday, you know. So
now you mentioned Trent Dilfer. Just remember, he was a quarterback.
Right. Exactly.
He was a quarterback, and he probably got hit about 5 or 6 times during the game.
Mm-hmm.
And he was hurting. You know what I'm saying? Just think.
Yeah.
Somebody like me who carried the ball 28 times, 31, 32 times, you know, and each and every single one of those carries, 5 guys hit me.
Yeah.
You know? So you just imagine how I felt on Monday mornings.
I can't.
I can only imagine. Now, with you out of the game, can you watch a game now? Now that you've been gone for so long, do you enjoy watching football on Sundays, or is it just something you can watch or not at all?
Well, I don't watch it too much. When I'm sitting around with my friends, I do watch. You know, I don't watch too much. Like Super Bowl, you get invited to go make an appearance or go to the Super Bowl game, and then you check it out. But I don't make it a point to watch the game. Oh, let's go watch this Sunday. What such and such, you know, a team play.
Right.
But no, I don't. But I do watch a little bit, to answer your question.
Now, tell us what post-career, after you retire, is it hard to shift gears? We hear so many horror stories of players who can't hang it up, who are getting into, you know, trying for too long, whatnot. Was it hard for you to retire and shift gears into a new career, or did you find that transition easy?
No, it wasn't hard at all. I was looking forward to it.
Yeah.
When my last year when I played, you know, I got hurt, my knee, and it wasn't that bad. So Marty calls me up in the room and said, we're going to put you in the injury reserve. You know, and I'm like, okay, my knee is not that bad. I can still play. But if you put me on the injury reserve, I'm going to go home. That's it. I'm not going to play anymore. And I remember his statement. He says to me, Christian, you are only 31 years old. You know, you still have a few years left. I said, no, coach, I'm done. You know, my body had enough.
What did you do post-career? What did you start getting into? Did you go home to Nigeria? Did you stay in the States? Did you have adventures? Or
I stayed in the States. I bought a small business making protein powder, and I did that for 14 years.
Okay.
And then I sold that. I've been running the Christian Okoye Foundation. Yep. 12 years ago, I started the California Sports Hall of Fame. After I was inducted into the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame. So I came back to California and found out that California didn't have a Sports Hall of Fame. So I started.
That's strange. Wow. Such a monstrous state.
Yeah. And then just last year, after working with a group of people, we came up with a phone case. So we make phone cases now for iPhone. So you guys, if you want to find out about it, go to Okoye.com, ChristianOkoye.com. It's on there. So we launched this last December.
Now, one thing I got to ask you, looking over all yourself, what the heck was Pirate Master, and how did you not win in that?
Oh, come on, man. Where did you see that at?
I'm a researcher, man. This is an interview.
Well, Pirate Master is a program, you know, the same guy that started doing Survivor.
Well, okay.
he came up with this big idea that CBS bought. And so they got a group of people together and they shipped us to Dominica, the island of Dominica. You know, it's not Dominican Republic. It's island of Dominica.
Right.
And it's a small island. Only 60,000 people live there, a whole country of its own. So they put us on a pirate ship in the middle of an ocean. And they were playing the games that survivors play. And it was so stupid. It was so dumb. I was like, take me out of here. And I was so glad they took me out, man. I think I was the second person booted off. So I went to the resort because I signed a contract that I wasn't going to go home until, you know, it was totally filmed. I was there for 6 weeks, six long vacations.
Well, you know what? Yeah. Kansas City Hall, Chiefs Hall of Fame, Pirate Master. It's, you know, you can't have everything.
Yeah.
No, it's not, huh?
But we would be remiss if we didn't add, tell us about the Christian Akoya Foundation and what it does and what kind of work you guys do.
Well, the Christian Akoya Foundation, because I was born poor and because when I was in Nigeria, I didn't have people like a professional athletes come to my high school and speak to the kids out there. We don't have that. And coming to this country, I realized that you can do a lot for the kids just by going to the high school and speaking to them, telling them your experiences and telling them how you got to where you are, in case if they're interested. And then you're encouraging them to to stay in school and do the right thing so they can be successful in life. You know, so I found that out, and so I wanted to seize the opportunity and help other kids do that, because nobody helped me. I just had great coaches and great teammates, and I was blessed. You see, so that's what we did. We put on free sports clinics. This last year is the first year that we didn't do the clinic here in the States. Since 1990, every year we've done that.
Wow.
I put that off because in Nigeria, I started the Christian Akoya Youth Sports Club. So hired some coaches over there. Every week they practice, they play games, and coaches teach them, the right things and motivation type thing, invite people to come and speak to them, just like I've done here with my foundation. So that's what's going on in Nigeria right now.
One last question and all. You had an amazing career. We enjoyed watching it so much, but how come you couldn't figure out how to catch a ball? Just out of curiosity.
Because it wasn't my thing. It's a weird looking ball. It's supposed to be round. If it was round, I could have caught it. I played goalie in soccer.
I was going to ask you about soccer. I was going to ask you what position you played, because I played all my life. And if I saw you on the field, I probably wouldn't play that long, because I picture you like playing defense and just killing people.
Yeah, I played defense. Yep. I was a right fullback. I played a little bit of goalie. Yeah, so
you have a team. Do you have a team that you root for internationally in soccer?
I watch a Nigerian national team a lot.
Right.
You know, they do very well.
Mm-hmm.
I watch Manchester United. All those European games. So you come on ESPN or Fox, and I check them out.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big Liverpool fan, so we have to end this interview. No.
It sucked.
Hey, third place, baby. Third place. Creeping up. Christian, I want to thank you so much for giving us a few minutes here. It's just awesome to talk to a guy like you. Where can people go to check out either your projects or the foundation or say hi? Where can they go?
Tell them to go to christianakoya.com. They'll find everything there.
All right.
So
That's awesome, man. Good luck with everything, and it's great to have you on, man.
Thank you, man.
Such a pleasure.
I have to ask about Pirate Master.
I didn't really end. I ended with Pirate Master, and why couldn't you catch?
I know. I was thinking, I'm like, You do know who this guy is, right?
I know. I know he would got a kick out of that question.
I would just love, like, if he got really mad about the ball question and, like,
he just hung up on us. Burloop! That was my one thing I was so embarrassed about.
Burloop, did you just piss off the Nigerian nightmare?
That'd be like,
listen, the firefighter you pissed off is one thing, or the shark attack victim that I pissed off.
The Bigfoot guy.
Yeah, yeah. But you pissed off Christian Okoye. Looking at pictures, he still looks like he can get in the game.
Like, I'll be in some, like, dark alley one night, and then I'll look around and just... Is that guy wearing the number 35 Chiefs uniform?
Watch me catch this ball. Yeah. I'll show you who the pirate master is, boy. But the one and only Christian Okoye. Let's take a quick break and we'll get back to this. All right, Mike. So we have John Morris, like I said, in the gold medal game tonight at some point. So hopefully we'll add, like I said, we'll add gold medalists to our resume of champions.
Yeah, I think the only thing that's left is an NBA champion.
Yep, we got to get that.
But, damn Kenny Anderson let us down.
But about a year, more than a year ago, we had Devin Harris on the show. And who Devin Harris is, he's one of the original Jamaican bobsledders. Yes, the Cool Runnings bobsled. He was an awesome interview back then. And he reached out. He had something to promote with the there's a Jamaican bobsled team again this year. I believe it's a female team, right?
Yeah, two-woman bobsled team for Jamaica this year.
Yeah. So he wanted to – I asked him, instead of us tweeting it, which, you know, has a little power, why not come on the show for a few minutes and we'll get to talk to him again. So it's always fun to have a guest back on. So let's give Devin Harris a call. Cool Runnings.
You called Canada, Jamaica today.
Yep.
Your phone bill is going to be great.
Oh, this podcast is draining me. Devin Harris, one of the original Jamaican bobsledders. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. It's been about, I don't know, at least a year and a half, maybe longer than that.
Yeah, man, it's been too long, dude. I thought you had lost my number.
But... You reached out. You had sent me a message on Twitter promoting, something with the Jamaican bobsled team. And I said, instead of obviously we'll retweet it and stuff, but I said instead of us tweeting it, we wanted to kind of it's just easier to talk to you and kind of get a perspective of, exactly what's going on. But first and foremost, it's Olympic time, Winter Olympics, so you've got to be all jacked up.
I just lost it for me. You said it's Winter Olympics time
on
what?
I said it's Olympic time, so you got to be, all excited. You guys have another team in the Olympics, correct?
Yeah, it's my favorite time of the 4 years. It's time for the Winter Olympic Games. My favorite Olympics. You know, people think it's that I'm in love with the Summer Olympics, but come on. not even close. But yeah, this is pretty amazing year for us. It's been 30 years since my teammates and I, kick-started this thing. And now we have a women's bobsled team for the very first time competing.
Awesome.
And we also have a real skeleton athlete. So it's a two firsts. We're doing women's bobsled and skeleton athlete. Skeleton.
Right.
For the very first time, yeah.
You know, that's amazing. Like, hold on one second. Yeah. So, how involved are you still? I know you're kind of like an ambassador almost. Hold on. I got this call coming.
Well, I'm a little bit more than an ambassador. You know, a couple of years ago, I was speaking to a friend of mine, and she goes, "So you're the guy who's creating strategy and buying bread." I'm like, yeah, that would be me, because I was running the program, and at the time when we were talking, I was, buying food to drive up to Lake Placid because the team was up there. So, yeah, man, since the Sochi Games, I kind of took over the running of the program, recruiting athletes, trying to raise funds, plan training, like everything. Some of the other guys from the original team have kind of, re-engaged and so it's not as burdensome as it used to be, no.
What's the vibe in Jamaica when the Winter Olympics come around? Do people look at it as, oh, this is you know, this is amazing that we're competing in this sport people don't think we'd be a part of? Or is it almost like, ah, oh, yeah, it's cute, they're heading down there? Do the country itself, like, really back the Winter Olympics?
Yeah, well, the energy is getting stronger and stronger now. Obviously, Summer Olympics, everybody's all over that, and they can tell you everything about the Summer Olympics. We are not quite there yet with the Winter Olympics, but we're on our way. I think especially with the women qualifying now, and one of our break woman, Tyra Russell, is a veritable track star from Jamaica. Everybody knows her.
Right.
That has also helped to raise the profile a bit.
Yeah, so tell us about the girls here. Tell us how this kind of came to be. How did they go about training for these things in 2017, 2016, as opposed to when you were doing this 30 years ago? How's it different? And tell us about the girls we expect to see on TV here.
kind of interesting. The more things change, the more they remain the same in a way. And certainly when it refers to training, but you know, so women bobsledding became an Olympic sport in 2002.
Right.
So women started training just before that, and Jamaica had a women's team back then. In fact, we won the first world push championship for women back in 99, 2000, somewhere around there. But then, you know, things fell apart. Our women didn't qualify for the Olympics back in Salt Lake, and we just never really got the program, you know, up and running after that. And then when I took over the program, I recruited women as well. I'm like, hey, we want men bobsledding, we want women, we want skeleton, men and women. So we recruited a bunch of women, started training. Jasmine Senlater, she competed for the U.S. back in 2014 with Lola Jones, finished 11th. But Chris Stokes and Wayne Thomas, both guys from our team, they met her even before she officially made the U.S. team, realized that she was Jamaican, and they've been trying to recruit her ever since. But she decided to stay with the U.S. She ended up competing for them in 2014. But after that, she decided that she wanted to come home to her Jamaican roots. So as it turned out, she came as an experienced driver. The woman that I recruited in 2014 into 2015, you know, they didn't make it. They just didn't make it. Jasmine came. We went to one of the top track clubs in Jamaica and found Kari Russell, track star, and said, hey, just try it. Just, you know, one month. Just give it a month and see. And she kind of liked it. So here we are heading to the Olympics.
It's amazing.
And with the with the troubles raising funds, what's the overall general goal? Do you look towards having both men and women and other events? Like, I know one year there was even like a cross country skier, I believe, for Jamaica,
yeah,
like 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Is the goal more events, more concentrating on bobsledding? What's the overall goal for you?
Gotcha. So I know you had asked about training earlier. I just realized I didn't answer that. And the short answer is we train the way all the other teams train. So in Jamaica, we're doing the running and the lifting and that kind of stuff in the summer. And then we travel to the tracks. We spend most of our time in the last few years in North America, Canada, you know, Whistler, Calgary, Park City, and Lake Placid in the U.S. So in 2010 in Vancouver, there was Errol Kerr, who was a ski cross. He competed in ski cross. That's an entirely different sport, an entirely different organization from bobsledding. So under the Jamaica Bobsleigh Federation, you'll have men bobsled, two-man bobsled, four-man bobsled. You'll have women bobsled, and you also have skeleton. So my goal is to, our goal is to develop a full, what I'm going to call a full bobsled program, which involves having, you know, men two-man, men four-man, women bobsled, and men and women skeletons. It's nice. It's a big chunk to bite off, but I don't think that's where we have to be pushing ourselves to be.
Yeah, so tell us, you sent me the link to your generosity.com, your Indiegogo. Tell us a little bit about that and what people can kind of, how they can help out and what your overall goal is here.
Yeah, man. So we actually created this, and thank you guys for, shedding some light on it. We created this fundraising page, to kind of hope, we're hoping to raise some funds to cover some of the debts you have incurred up to this point. You know, the guys are, the teams at the Olympics and the Jamaica Olympic Association are actually covering all of those expenses, thankfully. But they don't cover any expenses until you've qualified for the Olympics and you're actually heading to the Olympics.
Okay.
So we have some debts that we need to cover.
Right.
But also, the next Olympics are 4 years away. I know people are zeroing and they're focusing and enjoying, you know, these Olympics which I've just started, but I have to be thinking about how we're going to start preparing.
Right.
These current athletes that we have, we're going to continue to train them, but at the same time find new athletes to develop over the next 4 years. So it's our goal, guys, is it's not just to get to the Olympics, man. We can do that, and we have proven that over and over. We actually want to win,
yeah.
And you know, and it takes the time, investing the time to prepare to get to that level. And in order to do that, you kind of have to have funding. So we have the GoFundMe campaign that we're running now, and of course the music video I just shared with you guys.
Yep.
You know, we're hoping you know that. I don't know if the song will go platinum, but that would be nice. I don't know if we would have Grammy, but that would be nice. I mean, I say that jokingly, but in all seriousness, you know, we're hoping to, for the song to gain enough traction for us to be able to get some revenue off it to, again, put back into the program to develop our program.
Yeah, and I see there's some sweet, some good perks here for different donations. There's a Yes I Can children's book, a bottle opener. It goes up to a T-shirt, a very nice Jamaican bobsled sweatshirt, going up to like an anniversary jacket. And you could go all the way up to a dinner where we could meet you and come have dinner with you. Yeah, you don't want that from us.
I think my personal favorite among that is the anniversary jacket, man. 30th anniversary of the team, and you get this really, really cool jacket. You can't beat that, dude.
Now, let me ask you, since you were part of that pioneer team that made it to the Olympics where nobody thought about, like Caribbean countries or like that, do you ever get contacted by other countries who try to start programs? Like, I see Nigeria's in this year's bobsled. Did they contact you on, like, how you go about starting the programs or anything like that?
I wasn't contacted by them. I have been contacted, actually, by other sports out of Jamaica. So, for example, there's actually a Jamaican Ice Hockey Federation.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah, they started back in 2012, I want to say, somewhere around there. They're based here in the U.S. They've been recruiting, you know, young Jamaicans or, you know, Americans and Canadians of Jamaican roots. And they've played a few games. I don't think they're quite up to Olympic level yet. You know, they still have to contend with all the guys from the NHL, right?
Yeah, well, not this year.
Well, yeah, well, this is true. So I've consulted with them. I've been involved in helping them to get off the ground. And then there's a lady who contacted me. She wanted to create, and she did in fact create the Jamaican Ice, Figure Skating Union.
Nice.
Because her son, I think they're in Canada, and her son, her husband is Jamaican, which makes her son Jamaican, and she's a figure skating coach, and he's pretty good, and so hopefully next Olympics we'll see them there.
That's awesome. It's cool.
Those two jump out at me, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, like, because everything, you know, you hear Jamaican hockey team, you're like, yeah, but everything's got to start at some point, you know, and you are, you know, a perfect example of that. Now, do you travel with the team at all? Are you going to the Olympics, or are you staying here?
Yeah, so I generally don't travel with the team. I go visit, so to speak. I go watch a race. I've been to actually all the tracks in North America over the last few years with them as they race and train. I'm expecting to leave in the next few days for Korea.
Yes.
So I'll be able to see them then. But, you know, I'm not officially in the village. I'm just going there as a guy to go watch, you know. But that's cool.
That's awesome.
You have any flashbacks where you just go, let me get in there. Yeah. Let me get one run in there.
You know what? I think it's out of my system now. The worst was Salt Lake City, man. And I was at that race, that two-man race, and it was talk about suffering from withdrawals. And I was watching guys who I used to beat, you know, competing in the Olympic Games, and I'm like, man, there's no reason I shouldn't be in this race. You know, it was tough.
That's awesome.
It was tough, but, you know.
So, Devin, I want to thank you. Thanks for coming on. I think it's more effective to talk to you, you know, than just send something out so we get some background to apply to it. And good luck to the girls and all of Jamaica sports in this, you know, Winter Olympic Games. I've been tuning in. We've been pretty fixed on it. We just had a Olympic curler on last week, so we're kind of in the Olympic spirit. And I think what you're doing is pretty special. And, you know, who knows? Maybe they make a cool runnings movie about this team.
Who knows? And then you can have them on, right?
That's it. As long as you get us the in, you know.
Yeah, but I really appreciate you guys having me on. You know, thank you for shedding some light on our fundraising effort here, and I'm encouraging everybody to support the fundraising effort, support the cause. I'm encouraging everyone to check out the music videos. A pretty cool video with a new dance, by the way, the bobsled slide. So if I could just encourage everyone to learn a few moves, record yourself, post it, you know, send it to us. We're going to create a new video with as many people as we can.
We might have to send you a clip of the two of us doing it.
Dude, you should. Seriously, can you send that to me in the next couple of days?
You'll regret that when we send it, but yeah, we'll try to make something happen.
Send me a clip of you guys doing the bobsled style. It doesn't have to look perfect, you know? We just want to see you having fun. Shoot it horizontally, good lighting, and do it.
All right.
Hey, I'm holding you to the fire.
All right, we'll try to make something happen. We got to look at it first. We got to book studio time to practice and, you know,
get the insurance.
Yeah, you don't need all that much practice, man. just shoot the thing and send me the good one. Send me the outtake, all of it.
Devin, thanks so much, man, and good luck and have a great trip.
I appreciate you, man. Take care.
Take care.
All right.
I love that. It's
cool. That's so awesome.
It's cool because it's so, you know, timely. It's going on right now, you know, like, you know, across the world. And he's, you know, like, I was saying to him, like, you know, Jamaican ice hockey, maybe 20 years from now, maybe they're in it, you know?
I mean, that's the way to look at it. I mean, that story could easily be in, like, the funny little footnote where we hear about on the, like, a 30 for 30. He's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. That was so crazy, you know, but that they take it seriously and they're going to keep competing. I love hearing they're saying we're not just going there to show up. We want to win one of these.
Yeah, I mean, you have to start, like, you know, all these, just like America, like, we're getting, you know, where rugby's starting to become a bigger thing.
Yeah, we're starting a league in 2018.
Right. Curling, like, is like even Johnny was saying a couple weeks ago, is getting bigger in America. It's like, it's got to start somewhere, whether it's a little island or a massive country, you know?
Well, think about it. The MLS.
Yep.
I mean, it was a joke. You're going to put the biggest soccer event in the least soccer country on the planet?
Yep.
Just start off with the fact we call it soccer, not football.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, so it all starts somewhere, and hopefully the girls bring home a medal. That would be awesome.
Definitely, man.
So, all right, I am looking forward to
our returning guest
three times.
Yeah,
I think only I'm trying to think. AJ Mattioli, maybe Dom Bagnato might have been on technically a few times, but.
Yeah, I think Dom was three. I think AJ was three. I'll look it up because I have the full list.
I feel like AJ's got to be
about seven.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. I was gonna say he's got to be the up at the top.
Yeah, Verbal Shenanigans Hall of Famer. Yeah. Right there. Seven-time Verbi, AJ Mattioli.
Yeah, but so the return of Randy Santel, competitive eater. I mean, every time I look at his Facebook, or he's broken another seven. He's going on a road trip and does 10 different things in a row. Fascinating dude. Yeah, we've shared some funny experiences with him, and I hope maybe we'll get into that a little bit while we talk. But let's get the one and only Randy Santel on the line.
Hello, this is Randy.
Oh, Randy Santel. I know you.
Is this Mr. Scott?
It is. What's up, buddy? How you been?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm great. It's been a long time since we were drinking wine. No, margaritas out of a bag at my house at 4 in the morning.
Yes. Yeah, it has been a while.
Mm.
What have you guys been up to?
We've been just doing this still.
Yeah.
Not much has changed, but we've...
You travel the world. We've been sitting here since then.
Well, we talk to people who travel the world.
Oh, there you go. Well, I'm sitting right there with you guys now for the next couple months.
Now, for those of you who don't know, Randy, I don't even know. We'll get to that in a second. I don't even know how many... food challenge he has in the bank at this point, but he is a competitive eater who's gone at this point. How many continents have you been to?
I am a professional eater.
Professional.
Because I focus on food challenges, not so much eating contests, but I've got wins in 20 countries, which are in obviously North America, Europe, Australia, and then I've been to Singapore, so Asia, so four.
That's it.
Well, there's food challenges in Brazil, and there's an eater there that I know and am friends with now online. And then we've got some food challenges we know of now in South Africa. So time I'm done, I'll have wins in six continents, and we'll have to find a restaurant down in Antarctica to make us up something.
I guess just eating is the challenge win in Antarctica.
No, I hope it's like find a penguin and eat them whole.
I think getting there is probably going to be the expensive part.
See, I think it's going to be pretty messed up if you're winning food challenges in like Ethiopia. Like something seems off there, but so what have you been up to? What is the last I know I always look on your Facebook and you're on some kind of tour, like 7 or 10 challenges in a row. What are we coming off of?
Well, I'm in school now, and I started the semester back earlier this month, so I'll be on a little break. But before, during my winter break and Christmas break, I went on a 7-state tour, and then I did a few before Christmas as well, but I won 35 food challenges over the course of break, but then I won 28 during the Southwest USA tour that we did, where we went through Oklahoma, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, Southern California, we went through Vegas, Nevada, and then did some challenges in Colorado as well.
Now, Randy, when you do these challenges and you plan out your tours, is there like, do you have a set goal on how much money into it where you expand your trips, or how do you figure out what works best for you on what's best for your channel?
No, I mean, we just kind of do it, get everything done that we want to do as cheaply as possible, but there's not really, I know what kind of money we're working with, and really, I think it's a lot more than just the money. I mean, when we're on our trips driving, I mean, I was in a rental car the whole time because we drove. I put 7,000 miles on it over the course of break. I would never want to do that to an actual car I own. So that was only $550. And then in our videos that advertise the trip, we ask people, hey, if you got a place to stay, we'll definitely take you up on it. So I'd say probably half the trip we were staying with fans. And when we stay with hotels or at hotels, I mean, we get the cheapest we can without getting bed bugs. So, and then, I mean, we don't pay for food. Our meals are always free because I win. And then Mitch does the food challenges too, so he's real cheap to travel with. So our trips, especially in the USA, are really inexpensive.
Now, since we last saw you, has anything changed as far as your everyday diet or like your routines? Let me put this in. We watched Randy twice try to take on this hot dog challenge here in New Jersey, and we got kind of used to him and his routines and his listening to Miley Cyrus before or during things. Have you changed anything as far as your overall preparation for these challenges?
I don't really listen to music during every challenge now. It's just because there's not really any reason for it. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I usually listen to the music when I know it's going to be difficult. And some challenges I do just aren't that hard. Just because I've been doing it for years, my stomach can expand pretty well. But now, as far as that, I mean, I don't really... Now that I'm in school and I'm trying to keep my weight down, I don't really train that much.
Right.
I mean, because during the tours, every challenge I do trains myself for the next one. So there's not really any training involved. It's kind of just when I'm doing the tours, it's the big thing is just making sure my stomach and body is empty before I do another challenge. And then I've been doing that for years, too. So everything's kind of not that difficult. But, I mean, I still have pretty much the same dieting habits and stuff that I have been doing, and now not too much has changed. So I don't think it's been a while since I last saw you guys. I started school fall 2016, so I'm on my fourth semester of six. So
what are you going
for? I know that's new since seeing you guys. I'll be in 2020. I'll be a dietitian, so I'm in the dietetics program at Missouri State University, which is in Southwest Missouri.
Now, when people find out in your class that you do these challenges and so forth, do you get a lot of backing and say, oh, that's cool, and understand the whole science behind it? Or do you still get people who push back and go, you can't eat 6-7 pounds of food in one sitting and consider that healthy or can live a normal life?
No, I mean, most of the people in my degree and my program, they pretty much know now. I don't really think that many follow, but it's also... Dietetics is like 96% women. So I'm only in classes with like one or two guys in my nutrition classes. So, I mean, 20-year-old girls, I mean, they don't care about watching some guy eat on YouTube. They're drinking their Starbucks and complaining about how hard life is.
Now, I follow you, and I see that every once in a while you might have like a difficulty with a restaurant or whatnot. How often is that? Would you say it's like near 100% smooth as far as coordinating these things and being able to film and being able to, sometimes I know you get an audience, or are there bumps in the road that we don't even think of when we hear this?
Nowadays food challenges just aren't cool.
Really?
Restaurants just aren't putting any money or really anything into, they're just putting that much into their food challenges. And let's see. And really, plus too, the big thing that I run into is just mom and pop restaurants are very small minded. They're worried about their day to day stuff and they don't really think any kind of expanded mindset. So I can tell them, yeah, I've got 600. Almost 550 food challenges or whatever, and I'm coming to do, I've got 400,000 subscribers. That really doesn't mean anything to them, and they're more worried about how many eggs they have for the kitchen.
Right.
So we don't really have, not one single restaurant during our Southwest USA tour promoted via their Facebook page or anything that I was even coming. So everybody that came to all of our events, they were all just specifically followers that follow my Facebook and our YouTube channel. So, no, it's very unfortunate that a lot more could happen out of my trips and doing all the challenges we do and stuff, but the restaurants just don't really care. So you can't really do anything about it. You just got to call them in advance and just tell them I'm coming. And we only had, I actually had the cops called on me.
Right, that's what I was referring to.
Yeah, I figured that's what you guys were talking about. But yeah, they kicked me and like six families out.
Jeez.
Because they wouldn't service the food challenge, and we were apparently messing up their system or whatever they have. So yeah, they had the police come and they got us out of there. It was definitely the dumbest thing I've ever been involved with. But I posted about it,
right,
very strongly worded email, and they got all kinds of one stars to their Facebook rating. And I looked like 3 days later and they had taken down their Facebook rating, and there were some funny comments on their Facebook page. So can't really dwell on it. You just got to move on and
right,
let them do the thing.
Now, how, like you saying that food challenges you find are not cool or maybe not attractive, how has that changed your perspective on like your channel and keeping relevant? And no, I know I've seen you do like a lot of the dollar menu stuff, and but are you thinking about shifting to and changing your, I don't even know what to say, how to say it, like changing what you do a little bit or trying to
I don't really think it impacts our channel at all. I mean our channel is watched by people all over the world. The big impact is the restaurants themselves. So there's basically no chance of anyone ever beating me anytime soon in food challenge wins, because it's almost near impossible. Like 300 or 400 food challenges that I've won are gone now. Either the restaurant quit, or they just stopped their challenge, or whatnot. I mean, you guys know the volatility of restaurants.
Yes.
But, there's just so many fewer food challenges these days than there were back when I first started. There's a lot more getting canceled and dying than there are actually being created.
Right.
Now, out of curiosity, something we didn't bring up in our last two interviews, have you ever had a hard challenge just because the restaurant you ate at was just, let's just say, flat out nasty, their food or anything like that?
I haven't had that many food challenges be totally nasty, but I've had a lot of restaurants add in a pound or two. Not exactly trying to make me lose, but I guess making me earn it would be the way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a challenge I did in Albuquerque, New Mexico, that they canceled their challenge. They stopped it, but I kind of begged them to let me do it because I've been wanting to do it for years, since like 2011-10 when I started. And they did it for me, but they freaking made me earn it. I struggled through that. I don't know, when it came out, I did not think I was going to win, but there were like 10 families there to watch, and I was like, well, I got to try. So I just kept on eating, and I don't know, it was just one of those days, my stomach let me win.
Well, I mean, yeah, we've witnessed you firsthand have rules change on you, and things.
Yeah, I haven't followed up on that challenge. I wonder how it's doing. I'm guessing it's non-existent just because my buddy Bob went up there and ate a ton of them.
Yeah, I don't know. But we like I said, we've seen things change in front of our eyes. But I wanted to ask you, so now that you've been doing this for an extended period of time, do you notice, like, are you finding it harder to, like, when you're going into weight drop mode and back into getting in shape mode, are you finding any, like, long-lasting effects from doing this so much?
No. No, I think it almost, I mean, my metabolism is obviously slower than it was back when I first started, and my workouts aren't as good. So, I mean, I just counteract that by eating less. But also, when you do like a 30-day food challenge trip or whatnot, mm-hmm. you feel so terrible at the end of it that you're like absolutely stoked to go home and eat like a salad with some hot sauce on it. So, like, right now, and plus, me being 31 years old and in class with just all pretty good-looking 20-year-old women, it's motivating to not be a fat bastard. So I am it's not that hard to just not eat that much and work out more. Not in an unhealthy manner, but just speeding up the process a little bit. I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything, because I know that this summer, I mean, we're going to Asia, we're going to Europe, that's we're awesome. Going to Lebanon, maybe.
Wow.
We had a company there invite us to some things. So I mean, having some vegetables and mackerel out of a can right now is going to be fine, just because I know of everything coming up, and then I know how much more I can eat when I'm more fit and trim and looking better, obviously, too. So,
How's foodchallenges.com doing right now? I know, like, the last time we saw you were just kind of opening up the store with it, and I also know now you're getting a sponsorship from Dollar Shave Club. How's everything going on the business side?
Well, the foodchallenges.com itself is fairly non-existent as far as a revenue stream. I've got to talk with Mitch here in the next few days. I think we're about to get going on trying to find a more entrepreneurial person to somebody good with videos and stuff to want to start using the foodchallenges.com name. And, you know, you've seen all these viral videos on Facebook and stuff promoting these food challenges, just big meals. I mean, a lot of people share that crap on Facebook. I want to look into getting somebody to start kind of doing that using the foodchallenges.com name. But, yeah, that's as far as that. But channel-wise, we're doing the best we've ever done. We're at, like, 4.5 million views a month right now. And most importantly, we're getting, like, 24,000 new subscribers a month.
Wow.
Which is really, really good. So my Facebook page, too, that's really killing it. I mean, we don't directly make money off of that. But only a few months ago, I was at, like, 25,000. And we're about to hit 200,000. So I don't really know what got into it, but some of our videos got shared, a couple of them, and then we've had a bunch. You've probably seen them on Facebook and stuff, but we've had Unilad and a whole bunch of bigger pages share some of our videos too. And now with rules and stuff, they're required to like ask us beforehand and in the video or in the description or somewhere credit our channel or mm-hmm. our Facebook page. So that's all been really helping a lot as well.
Well, that's great, because that piggybacks right into my question. My question is going to be, you know, you've been running this successful YouTube channel, and we've heard so many success stories. Do you have advice for someone who, say, I'm a guy trying to start a channel with whatever it is, on how to make that successful? Do you have like a blueprint plan or something that worked for you?
Well, I got not lucky, but it was nicer for me. It's kind of like I made like $7,000 one summer buying and selling TVs off of Craigslist, but it was back before everybody was so into Craigslist and you were able to do it.
Right.
It's kind of with the YouTube channel. I started back in 2010, mm-hmm. back when there wasn't 5 billion minutes of content added per day or whatnot. So it was easier to get started. Now, as far as the YouTube world now, the big thing is to figure out something you enjoy. And then just, I mean, really don't expect you to have, like some people, they see the success of our channel and they want to do what we do, but they don't realize that I've been doing it since 2010, so 8 years now. So the big thing is figure out something you love, figure out how to do something different that is kind of different in that field compared to everyone else that's in it. And then just, yeah, I mean, if people know that you're passionate about it and excited about it, then they'll want to keep on watching, they'll want to share. And no, the big thing is just a lot of people get into YouTube wanting to have that life and all this kind of work for yourself and blah, 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 blah. But then once they realize how much work it is and how much time you spend on everything, they start to die off. So the big thing is if you're wanting to do it, go big or go home, and know that it's a process, not just kind of going to pop up overnight.
Hmm. That's a shame, because my plan was to not only do food challenges but sell TVs on Craigslist. So now both of my dreams are gone right now.
You've been phased out.
Damn it.
You can't make shit on TVs nowadays. This was back in like 2007. Back when you could still sell a tube TV for $100.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you have a retirement date in mind when you're going to say that's it, or a certain number? You aiming for like a clear 1,000, or?
Oh yeah, I've been looking forward to retirement for like 5 years now. No, I finished with my schooling. I've got two more semesters after this one, so I'm going to graduate in May 2019. And then I've got to do a 1,200-hour internship to satisfy the requirements to take a test and finally become a registered dietitian. So that all won't happen until about 2020 or 2021. So it'd be very, I don't remember the word off the top of my head right now, but contradictory to be a dietitian doing food challenges. And so I'm going to retire shortly before or around that time as far as when I actually am a dietitian.
Randy, it's great talking to you again, and hopefully you're coming to Jersey or New York or Pennsylvania sometime soon.
My buddy in New York City is about to have a kid, so I need to come up and see him. I mean, his life's already over once that kid comes out, but still be able to see him and blah, 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 and haven't been up there a while. There's a couple food challenges I've been wanting to do, but yeah, no, it'd be great to hook up and see you guys when I'm up there.
Yeah,
you guys all like have women and stuff now, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say my girlfriend at the time, now fiance, one of our favorite memories, we still bring it up from time to time, is she ran the race the next day after we hung out late into the night, slapping the margarita bag and drinking out of it. And
oh yeah, that relationship was fresh, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was fresh, real fresh.
Yeah,
and we came in and you were asleep on the floor. But we thought you were like dead, and you're a big man, so it was just like a speed bump in the middle of the living room. And I'm like, Randy, and you're like, oh man, I wasn't comfortable on the couch. I just slept on the floor. You're like, I was dizzy.
I always tell people I'm invincible. People worry about me, but yeah, no, I'm always doing just fine.
Yeah. Randy, where can people go to check you out and say hi and look at what you're doing?
Well, everything's Randy Santel. I've got Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Facebook and YouTube are the two big things that I am into. I don't really Snapchat that much, but if anybody wants to figure out anything related to food challenges, find a food challenge near you or figure out how to train or anything like that, check out foodchallenges.com. And if you want to just watch for the entertainment value, our YouTube channel is randysantel.com. We've got almost 420,000 subscribers now, so things are going good.
All right, man. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we miss you. So let us know when you're coming around.
Definitely.
All right. Sounds good. It's good to talk to you guys again. Yep. Bye.
Our good friend, Randy.
Yep. Always good to catch up with good people. You know?
There's certain guests that I would have on a million times. Yes. Like AJ Mattioli is always welcome here. Paul Templer is always welcome on the show. Right? Then again, Trent Dilfer is always welcome on the show. Victor Wooten is always.
Listen, Victor, you didn't make the list. I'm sorry. I know you got a new album to promote, and you're going to put it on verbalshenanigans.com.
I know. You were on the Fallon show recently, but I don't know.
No, I don't care if Jimmy Fallon wants to join the interview.
I don't know if you're Verbal Shenanigans material.
Yeah.
I mean, thank you for the hour.
I mean, the numbers were decent, but come on, bro.
Thanks for the hour you gave us. But which reminds me, he keeps telling me to remind him to take a picture with our shirt on, but I forgot. But I do remind him every once in a while.
Yeah.
We should send Randy a shirt.
Yeah, I'll get his address. We'll send him
Hope a I t-shirt. Have his size. He's a big dude. But
you have to get pre-food challenge size, not post.
Remember your food challenge?
It was a hot fall. P-H-A-A-L. It's an Asian dish that I did for the Shenanigans Showdown.
But you did that, and you also did the hot dog thing.
Yeah. At 11 and a half I did.
That's pretty good, man.
Yeah.
I remember.
I would have held it in for the 10 minutes, which would have count as a number. They did come out afterwards.
They may have changed the rules in that minute and a half.
Well, yeah. That was a weird thing. I recall it wasn't even the hot dogs that were getting to me. It was duck sauce with fried onions. That's the crispy weird onions you put there, put in salads, and that was just so nasty. That's what kind of stopped me.
Yeah. You did a good job, though. I remember commentating that. That was a long time ago. That was episode 60 something, probably. Wow. Talk about an action. I guess it's not action packed when we're just sitting here talking.
Hmm.
Talk about a.
a bunch of people who did action, and we just sat here and talked to them.
Yes, we're living vicariously through their action.
There we go.
Christian Okoye, mm-hmm. Devin Harris, Randy Santel, mm-hmm. doing all these amazing things, and we are
just looking at just each other every week.
Just asking them, what's it like being
doing things? What's it like being cool?
What's it like doing stuff?
What's it like having fans who love you?
But we talk to some really amazing people.
Yeah, man. We do.
It's
we always appreciate.
Sometimes them. You, I know we said this before, but sometimes we got to take a step back. Like, I guess the thing, you know, we did the show every week and we schedule, so you get lost in it. But sometimes you got to take a step back and be like, wow, like look what we did in the last 4 weeks. You know what I mean? Like Olympic curler and Kenny Anderson and Gift of Gab and Al Snow and an American Gladiator and the Pixar animator and the Jane Goodall. Yeah. So we've been really...
And that's 2018. That's somebody's full year, and that's our mid-February. So, you know, good us.
Yeah, patting on the back, you know. But we are scheduled through March, so we are... we got plenty coming for you guys.
Some good stuff down the pipeline. Yeah, don't say names because we don't want to screw ourselves.
Yeah, I was gonna say we never really say too many names because you know sometimes day of we got to cancel these things or move things or they move things. So don't like to jinx it, but we got some good stuff coming here.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to talk. I wanted to bring this up last week. I totally forgot. So on Saturday, I went to my buddy Taryn's apartment. And he's always been like a big video game nerd, like tech geek, like always had the newest of the new. Like,
okay.
So he has, I got to try VR for the first time.
Virtual reality?
Yeah. Like, but not like the phone and the, you know, like the thing. He has like a legit like computer set up to like his big screen and like there's this virtual reality helmet you put on and he had four infrared cameras around the room.
Okay.
Have you ever tried any of this? Like, even, like, the crappy ones?
Well, I've done, like, the phone into the goggles kind of thing.
Yeah.
With, like the haunted house things where it jumps out and goes, and you look weird as you're in your living room with a pair of goggles on doing that.
But, oh, like you've never been caught in your living room with goggles on.
Well, I had pants on at the time, so that was weird.
You're not kidding anybody. So this was my first experience with it. Dude, it is like mind blowing the games that kids are going to have now and just in 5 years in the future. I mean, you put these things on and you could like you're just holding two controllers and like right away you could see your hands and the you know like you look and you can see the distance, you can look up, look down, like you right away I feel like I'm in the Matrix, you know, like I'm like whoa, you know, like and the helmet's not like that bad where like it's like you immediately feel like you're in this thing. And, like, you don't know what way you're actually facing in the room or anything like that. Mom, don't call me while I'm podcasting.
I'm VRing. There's no phones in here.
So I went into it. The first thing I tried was just, like, a little racquetball game, like the ball. Okay. So I kind of, like, Wii a little bit, but, like, you could look around and hit it. And I was getting used to it. But then he put this game on. I don't remember the name of it. It was, like, Hot something or whatever. And you're moving.
Hot Dominican Men, the virtual reality game.
And these, like, guys are coming towards you. It still doesn't sound good yet. but they're, like, they got guns and, like, bottles and stuff, right? And they're, like, shooting at you. And the faster you move, the faster they move. So you have to, like, move slow, like, dodge, like, bullets and stuff. And you have to look around for, like, guns in the ground, like, before you get shot. And, like, you like look back and like pick one up behind you or you shoot the guy and like his gun will fly out and you like grab it behind you. You know, like everything you do, like your hands are like involved. You duck on the ground. I'm like on the ground, like rolling past bullets and stuff like that. It blew my mind apart. I feel like everyone needs to experience this. And these are like the beginning games of this system or whatever. Yeah. Like there's going to be games where you're basically like just in World War II.
This is a tad different from our days where our biggest struggle was blowing into the cartridge so the Nintendo would work.
So you could use Christian Okoye in Tecmo Super Bowl and go wreak havoc.
So I can't catch, huh?
The world of VR, I can't even imagine where it's going. I'm sure. I know I've read that like even like professionally they're going to use it a lot for like doctors like work, like learning surgery and like stuff
I'll
like
bring into my world NASCAR. There are actual drivers who are getting their starts in VR racing where because they set it up, they'll have like multiple screens, they'll have an actual, you know, wheel that would be the consistency in a car and they're learning tracks they've never been to in their lives, and they're going to the tracks and, you know, they're eating them up.
They've experienced it before.
They literally have the entire feeling. They absolutely know, okay, if I go up here, I'm going to be a little loose if I have this set up. So,
yeah, I was thinking, like, even like baseball, like, even if it comes down to the high school level, like a coach wants, like, in the off season, their kids to go work on some swings, like, they just get a bat and a virtual reality, like, and go, all you need is a little bit of space, and they're getting pitching, and they're seeing
things.
And
they get to see stuff they're not going to see in little leagues that don't allow curveballs or anything like that, so you can go in a VR machine and go, okay, that's how it's going to look like when I face one.
Yeah, my buddy was telling me he coaches, like, softball, and he's, like, saying that, or, no, he was his kid's team. There was that this thing where, like, you could select, you wanted, like, Randy Johnson to pitch to you or Pedro to pitch to you and see what their stuff, like, ridiculous. And I know, like, the military uses a bunch of stuff, like, VR stuff. So we are just on the cusp of some, I think, things, like, basically, we're going to go into some Black Mirrors type stuff, and people are just going to live in their VR sets for now. Well, it's VR good. Pornography, like, everything.
Well, you know, that's good. Oh, anything that happens. Oh,
that's already out there. Like, that's probably, that was probably the first thing they tried.
Like, when they invented the phone, the next day somebody's like, oh, set up a sex line.
Yeah, 100%. But I just, like, I was blown away, and I'm not, like, a big video. I play occasionally. I have my PlayStation is basically a Netflix machine. Like, I don't have a smart TV, so it's
yeah.
Like, I play occasionally. I play Madden or FIFA or something, but.
What was the last game system that you had, out of curiosity?
Well, I have the PlayStation 4 right now.
Oh, okay.
I do play it every so often, but I have, like, ADD. I don't get I basically play sports games because I can't, like, my brain doesn't get into, like, these missions anymore or anything like that. Like, I wish I acknowledge how awesome these games look and, like, how much I want to kind of be part of that. I remember having Call of Duty a little bit, and that was pretty cool, but I was just getting destroyed by, like, six-year-old kids, and I couldn't take it anymore.
I remember, like, 20 years ago, I had a buddy who had a van, and
this is how a lot of your stories start.
And his big thing was he had an Atari Jaguar.
Ooh,
in his
Jaguar.
Yeah. That was a system that lasts like 8 minutes.
Yeah, I was gonna say that one didn't take. You remember the Virtual Boy?
Oh,
that
yeah.
Little, like, that was like the first attempt at kind of like a.
Yeah, when you put it in, everything was red lights and. Yep. But somehow they said it was portable, but there's no physical way to bring it anywhere.
Yep, it was pretty bad. But it was like red too, and kind of annoying.
Oh yeah,
hurt your eyes.
I think I heard stuff about like kids getting seizures off of that stuff too.
They say about every system and thing these days. Speaking of kids, did you see that thing about the bunny movie?
Yeah.
And they're
Jack Rabbit, I think it's called.
And they're like making a big stink because they like.
Because they make fun of a guy who has a blackberry allergic reaction or allergies.
I'm not sure I want to be on this planet anymore.
There's nothing to make fun of anymore. I mean, there's. It's one thing to. If I. transgenders or something like that, where you go, oh, come on. There's tons of them. We've been through this. We understand stuff that we didn't understand before, but. To go to the level of them saying, well, you can't make fun of somebody with allergies, it's, yeah, why not?
You're an allergist. you don't like our kind.
Let me guess, you eat peanuts all day long.
You peanut lover.
Well, I do enjoy peanut, you asshole. They're just chucking like peanut butter at you.
Like painting peanut butter on themselves in protests. Like,
I actually saw a protest when I was in Boston. It was. They were a company called Canadian Goose, something about, oh, they use wolf hair, they trap wolves for
wolf
clothing.
Hair. A wolf hair jacket?
Apparently. I mean, they gave me the pamphlet in true fashion. I looked at it for 2 seconds and threw it out.
I threw it on the ground and then put my wolf hair coat back on. I love this coat.
Yeah.
But we could talk more about this next week. I think we had quite the podcast. It's only 7.5 hours this week. So,
yeah,
guys.
We're doing better. Doing better.
So the numbers have been going up. Okay. We appreciate that. We're happy to be part of the BS Podcast Network. So go check them out. There's a lot of good podcasts that other than ours. But, you know, check out ours first. But no. We've had a lot of good episodes to go back last week. Check out Don Jameson and go check out Rich Bidding.
Rich Binning.
Rich Binning, yeah, yeah.
Puppetry of the Penis.
Puppetry of the Penis guy. Really interesting interview. And then I want to thank Christian. I want to thank Randy. And I want to thank Devin Harris. So good luck to the Jamaican girls team. And good luck to our boy Johnny Morris tonight. Hopefully taking on gold. Hopefully we'll be able to report that next week.
That'd
so
great.
What you can do for us is like us, share us, comment. But the most important thing would be like sharing it with friends. Say, hey, this podcast was good. Check them out. And then, of course, follow us on social media. I'm not going to go into all that. Just Google Verbal Shenanigans. Berlew, anything to promote before we get on out of here?
Yeah, we're going to promote one of our former guests, good friends of ours, Tooth Grinder. They just announced a big tour, 8 states in May, mostly Northeast, but also in Tennessee, Alabama, and like I said, Maryland, New York, Maine, New Jersey. They're going to be touring with Bullet for My Valentine and Trivium. Yep. It's going to happen in May. Tickets are on sale on Friday. Go to Facebook, look up toothgrinder.usa, and check out the band. They were great guests, great people. Wish them the best on this tour.
Yeah,
maybe
we might actually be going. My brother might put us on the get list. But yeah, so Tooth Grinder, good band. I really dug their latest album. But I want to promote our good friend Pamela Ray, fellow comic. She just wrote an article about like women's issues with like Lady Doritos and stuff like that. A really well written article about like her losing weight and appreciation of her body and whatnot. She's a comedian. She's I think she's technically a midget. I'm not sure. She's very short. She has Tourette syndrome, but she does a lot of presentations all over the country now. But I lost my page. But Maim, I don't know if I say this correctly, Maim Bialik, the girl from Big Bang Theory and Blossom. I think I might be butchering her name, but she kind of like shared her piece and like – you know, put it on her website and whatnot. So that's great for my friend Pam there. So go check it out. Very, very well written. Guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. This morning.